You're on Solidarity Breakfast, and we've got a live guest. It's unbelievable. Hello, Hamish Sawyer. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me, Annie.
Yeah, and you've come in from Linden New Art.
That's correct.
Yes, and of course, if you're an old stick like me, you know Linden. It's a beautiful Victorian mansion that's just up from Ackland Street, the action in Ackland Street, go up the hill past McDonald's, and you will find it.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. And it's got an exhibition at the moment called Coral Futures.
Yeah, so the exhibition looks at coral as a material and a metaphor for everything that's going wrong in the world, but the way that it's such a vital and connecting subject material for thinking about not just climate change and the impacts on the Great Barrier Reef, but it's sort of the way it intersects with larger sort of cultural, economic, social issues.
Okay, and you have relocated to, it's not so chilly anymore. It's really warm outside, but Melbourne, and you've come from, you used to live up north, right? So this is a this is a collaboration with a northern...
It's a collaboration with the University of Sunshine Coast. I did live in Cairns, though, Gimoy Cairns, and I was working at Northsite, which is a contemporary art organisation. And so that was really when I was up there for a couple of years, in that specific location, thinking about... And being in close proximity to the reef and so becoming acquainted with the practices of artists. Although, funnily enough, a number of the artists in the exhibition are actually from Melbourne. So it's quite a popular subject, coral, for contemporary artists. And this exhibition doesn't pretend to be exhaustive, but there's, it covers the practices of five individual artists and then an art centre from the Torres Strait Arab. So it's it gives an insight and I hope the intention of it is to be poetic and speculative. It's a very heavy issue, but I think one of the great things about art is that it makes us look at issues, complex issues like that in thoughtful and imaginative ways.
And there's First Nations as well.
Correct.
As settler artists.
Correct. So, yeah, so Arab Arts, which is in the Torres Strait Islands, so at the very top of the Great Barrier Reef, and they are an arts centre that work predominantly with ghost nets, which are the fishing line and other plastics which are trapped in the sea and, kill sea life, particularly turtles, or sort of sit in the ocean and break down to form microplastics. But they take this collected plastic and transform it into really whimsical, quite engaging works of art which speak to the importance of the reef and sea life to their culture, their traditions, but also their way of living. Like they're literally living on the reef, so their survival is dependent on the reef survival as well. So I think the idea of them taking this really harmful material and transforming it into work which tells these important stories is a really wonderful and powerful thing.
You're the curator of the show.
Correct.
So what did you have in mind, or what were you trying to achieve by choosing this specific kind of artists that have been invited to exhibit, but also the types of art that are on display?
Yeah, of course. So as I said, over time working in Cairns and obviously being in proximity with art centres like Arab and seeing that work firsthand, but being aware of other practices, so artists that I've worked with previously in different contexts, like Marion Tubbs, who's an artist based in on Bundjalung country in northern New South Wales, who made this really fantastic video work about 5 or 6 years ago called Nervous Systems, which is sort of like a video assemblage of found material, found sound clips and ripped images from the internet to narrate the life cycle of coral. But then it sort of unfolds into this bigger picture, video essay, where she's looking at the way in which coral intersects with so many other parts of life. The fact that in 2019, coral was the Pantone Colour of the Year, which is quite funny given the current this year's selection and the controversy that's caused. So,
what is this year's selection? Oh, I don't even.
It's like a. It's a white. It's a very white white. So they, it's like a snowflake white. It's yeah. So it's
Gasp.
Yeah. So which has received a bit of a flack, quite rightly, but
weirdly political.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Like no politics in colour and no politics in sport. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Exactly. But it's you can't help but bring it in. So and then other artists, so as I said, artists, Melbourne based artists, so Nicholas Mangan, who's a very prominent incredible artist who had a survey show at the Museum of Contemporary Art last year, has had this project called Core Correlations, looking at the reef as a kind of metaphor, you know, thinking about it as a barrier around the continent of Australia, but also as a metaphor for the Australian government's policies around climate change and migration.
Why do you think so many artists, you know, outside of this exhibition bringing them together, have kind of organically come to be so interested in coral as a metaphor?
Maybe the organic bit.
That's a really good question, actually. I think thinking about it, it's such a high profile, highly visible symbol of the reef and what that means in terms of the tourism industry, for example. But it's such an extraordinary organism, animal. Mm-hmm. You think about the coral spawning on the reef, which is happening sort of imminently, and the way that people are just so drawn to it, and as this sort of beautiful, otherworldly looking symbol of the reef and reef ecologies and the sustainability. And because it's under such threat, so things like coral bleaching, crown of thorns starfish, agricultural runoff, which is a huge problem, and so it's almost, it's like the canary down the coal mine.
Yeah, it is. The fascinating thing about this is that because of the nature of human centric and economy based rationalism that we're caught in a sort of a bubble, the things that happen in nature which inform our life actually are much more complex than that storyline actually gives out. So an exhibition like this actually allows humans to unleash the thing that humans are actually good at, which is art and culture.
Yeah, and that's absolutely right. And in terms of the thinking behind the show, you know, the climate crisis can seem, something that's insurmountable, or we're just removed from it, right? Like we see all the floods and droughts and bushfires through a screen, media or, you know, the news. And so...
It's over there.
Yeah, and by focusing on one individual species, and starting to sort of think about all the ways that it's actually connected with our daily life and how it intersects with our lives, it sort of empowers people to understand that they actually do have the capacity to do something as well.
Yeah.
On the theme of making climate change action kind of relevant to people's lived experience, do you have any thoughts about the significance of having an exhibition like this in a place like Melbourne, which can feel very remote from some of these environmental issues?
That's a really great point. And I think when I came to Lyndon and I pitched this exhibition, obviously we're by the bay, so we are connected to the water. It's summer, that time of year when a lot of people come to St Kilda. It is very removed, like geographically, conceptually. There's one work I just want to mention before we run out of time, and that's a film. It's a feature-length film, experimental documentary by Rachel O'Reilly, who's a queer settler, artist and researcher, looking at the history of the Save the Reef campaign. So, back in the 60s, good old Sir J.B. Occupeterson granted all these licenses.
Yeah, the Great
explore.
Destroyer.
Yeah. So, and so it was actually a couple of Anglo-European Australian artists, so Judith Wright, a poet, an environmentalist, and John Boost, who was originally from Melbourne, who sort of spearheaded those original campaigns to stop the drilling of the reef.
Yeah.
And it was actually the trade unions that physically stopped it because they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't do it. Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah, they wouldn't let the boats go out.
They saved the world.
Yeah, yeah. So, but it also, you know, I guess revisits it to think about, well, you know, where were the traditional owners? Where are First Nations people? Because, of course, you know, if you look at Juru country around Mission Beach where the campaign was focused, they'd all been moved to Palm Island. Yeah, in the early 20th century.
Yeah, they took their country and they put them on an island.
Yeah, so it looks at... It addresses those gaps as well in the story, but I think it's incredibly informative and in a way the film does a lot of heavy lifting, but I think it's really, it's a really fascinating piece of work, which sort of orientates the more sort of speculative, creative works in the exhibition, but it's a really compelling film.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. And there's some hands-on things. We've arrived at having a conversation with you halfway through the exhibition period time frame. So it started on November the 15th, but it goes to February the 1st.
Yes.
And you had a variety of different workshops, which is fantastic, real hands-on stuff, how to make plastic useful.
Yeah, yeah. And that can, I should say there is an opportunity that continues throughout the show. We have an activity space in the exhibition where you can contribute to this sort of slowly growing, evolving reef that's made out of reclaimed, recycled plastic. So that runs throughout the exhibition.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you very much for coming in and talking to us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I think it's just so great.